Somewhere along the way, too many Republicans in Congress became indistinguishable from the big spending Democrats that they used to oppose. The only power of government that could stop them was the power of the veto, and it was rarely used. If that authority is entrusted to me, I will use the veto as needed. I will veto every single bill with earmarks, and every single beer that we have come across my desk, I will make them famous.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome back. My name is Phil. This is My Life as a Foodie. Bubby, man. Thank you, Bubby. Bubby sends me a link to that video. I just had to use it. Poor McCain, man. Somebody get that dude a beer. Obviously, it's on his mind. Anyway, welcome yet again. Entering second year of the program. A little looser. A little edgier, maybe. I don't know. Don't really care. I'm just driving this car. Oh, yeah. Music by Alice in Chains. If you like that song, you can get it on the iTunes store, 99 cents. I'll put a link on the website. Turns out, I was not selected to be on Bobby Flay's show Grill It, and neither was anybody else on that website, just from what I can tell. So I don't know what the hell that was about. I was watching Next Food Network Star. I'll get to that later. Don't ask. I saw previews for the show. They did a little coming attractions. And all the people that he had on it looked like models and professional actors, so I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't get it. I don't really care either. I mean, thanks again to all of you guys for showing your support for that. It was really awesome just to see the outlay of support that I got, calling in the troops and stuff. But now that it's all over, I'm not 100% sure I'm going to watch that show because it looks like crap. I mean, the idea of having his actual fans on the show seemed appealing to me. He was going to have, you know, just everyday people who are fans of Bobby Flay come on his show and cook with him. But from what I'm seeing from these attractions, it looks a little bit more polished than that. And you guys can all feel free to call me a hypocrite, all right? For trying to get on the show in the first place, I'm a bit of a hypocrite because all I do is rag on Food Network. I mean, I really do. I have it coming, so you can lay it on me if you want. I've been speaking out of both sides of my mouth. I hate Food Network, but given the chance to be on it, here I am. I'm going to jump right on. But now, the gloves are off, and I can hate them again. Anyway, that Next Food Network star, another train wreck piece of shit, isn't it? I mean, have you seen that? What the hell is that? I mean, where do they find people like this? And what's with this culinary point of view? They asked all these people to create a culinary point of view, and then they pissed all over them for it. It's a stupid idea to begin with. And you ask them to do this, and then you tell them how dumb it is. Here's my culinary point of view. I find fresh food, I cook fresh food, and I serve fresh food. Do you like it? Good. Does it need seasoning? Here's some salt. You know? But if you don't like my food, you know, don't eat it. Go eat somewhere else. Get the hell out of my house. You know, that's my culinary point of view. Culinary point of view. Dude, you're begging them to make shit up. Of course it's going to suck. Quit hiring people just to look good. I mean, that's all they're doing. They're just getting people in there that look good, that have a fairly decent personality, and then they find out that they have no real character. They need to find real character. They need to find someone with spirit. You know, someone who's not afraid to tell you to stick it in your ass if you're not happy with it. That's why the network sucks. It lost its edge. It's got no bad boys on it now. And the minute it thinks it has one, that fat bleach blonde wannabe bitch is doing commercials for TGI Fridays, and they're showing them on the web in front of my segment for my fucking quackadillas. You bitches. How dare you? TGI Fridays? I'm cooking a freshly killed duck on the grill, boiling beans, not taking them out of a can, like semi-whore made. I'm making real food, and you're showing that blonde pimp pitching TGI fucking Fridays in front of my video. Thanks. No wonder everybody turns on you. Yeah, George Carlin died last weekend, so I wanted to acknowledge that for a minute. I've been a fan of George Carlin since I was 8 years old. My brother collected his albums, and when I was a kid, he used to bring them home. Every time he'd get a new one, I would just be clamoring to listen to it. Now, I grew up in a Christian household, so this was like gold to me to have something like this to listen to. And to give me a chance to listen to a guy talk about using drugs and sex and stuff like that, oh, God, it was just nuts. My brother would leave the house. I'd sneak away, I'd put on one of his albums, strap on the earphones, turn off the lights, just listen to his stuff. Over and over, for hours, I would listen to his albums. I'd memorize his acts and lip-sync them into the mirror. That's how obsessed with this stuff I was. I mean, the man was a free thinker, and the world of comedy would not be the same today without him. Because he just kind of changed the face of comedy. He was a true legend. And I thought he got a little weird and a little liberal toward the end of his career, but I always found him funny, entertaining, and he had a history of heart problems, and that eventually got him. I guess he complained of chest pains, went to the hospital a few hours later, has a massive heart attack, and that was that. So I wanted to play his bit on germs and food poisoning as a tribute, because it's semi-topical to the show, and I thought it was a really good piece to play from him.
There's another thing, germs. Where did this sudden fear of germs come from in this country? Have you noticed this? The media constantly running stories about all the latest infections, salmonella, E. coli, hantavirus, bird flu. And Americans, they panic easily. So now everybody's running around scrubbing this and spraying that and overcooking their food and repeatedly washing their hands, trying to avoid all contact with germs. It's ridiculous, and it goes to ridiculous lengths. Fear of germs. Why, these fucking pussies. You can't even get a decent hamburger anymore. They cook the shit out of everything now because everybody's afraid of food poisoning. Hey, where's your sense of adventure? Take a fucking chance, will you? You know how many people die in this country from food poisoning every year? 9,000. That's all. It's a minor risk. Take a fucking chance, bunch of goddamn pussies.
God, that was so great. And it's still true to this day. You know, we're still running scared from that tomato scare a couple weeks ago. Dominated the news. Practically dominated my show. And now people are bringing up the spinach crisis again. Just as, you know, because they remember it. Because it wasn't too long ago. And I'm sure there's going to be another one soon. I'm predicting eggs. That they're going to attack eggs. They can't really attack pork anymore because the fear of trichinosis is kind of gone now. But eggs. They're going to be nailing eggs. Mark my words, okay? Anyway, we love you, George, wherever you are. I know he didn't believe in religion. Who knows where he ended up? He once said, I should play that. I'm going to play that. He once said in the bullshit department, nobody slung it better than religion.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing, and all wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
So the beer we're featuring on today's show is Dale's Pale Ale from Oscar Blues Brewery. This beer is my new favorite for the summer. I made the decision. Oscar Blues Brewery is located in Lyons, Colorado, and I didn't know a thing about them until Greg and I saw them at the GABF last October. You might recall if you watched the Hopped Up video series that I did last year, one of the first images on the very first episode was a can called Dale's Pale Ale, and that was Oscar Blues Brewing. And in the video, you might recall we were drinking this stuff called 10-50 and Old Chub. Great, continue to repeat, Papa Chubby. Anyway, that was the one. The beers were all really delicious and fairly strong in alcohol. And the marketing on the stuff was just really super impressive. So that was an immediate attraction for me. But the most impressive thing about this brewery is this. That's right. They can their beer. And you all know how I feel about canning craft beer. I think it's fantastic. Cheaper than bottles. Easier to store. Gets cold quicker. Stays cold longer. Recycles easier. Doesn't let the light in. Doesn't skunk. Cans rule. And I don't know why I didn't taste this beer when I was at the booth. I never tasted it. And maybe I was just enamored with 10-50 and Old Chub. So I really didn't feel like drinking pale ale. Normally, pale ale, it's not going to be high on my list because it's just kind of average. I'm always looking for something different. But regardless of that, I found Dale's Pale Ale on the shelves here in Southern California recently in more than one store. So distribution of this one beer from Oscar Blues has finally reached the West Coast. And then I did a little more research, and guess who I found out actually bought distribution rights and brought them here to California? Yes, sir. Stone Brewing. If they start distribution of 10-50 or Old Chub, I'm going to go broke because I'm going to drink that all the time. I just read this morning they're going to be serving at Stone Brewing's 12th anniversary celebration, which is middle of August. Stonebrew.com/12th. So if you want to check that out, they'll be there. Let's have some. I've got open the can already. Let's pour it and smell it, taste it. Now I'm acting like I've never had it before. I've been drinking it all week. It's tremendous. It smells good. It almost smells like an IPA. It's very close. 6.5% alcohol, 65 IBUs. And it's got a hell of a history behind it, too. Oh, man, that's just good. That's just good. No bite, just very smooth. Dale's Pale Ale was America's first hand-canned craft beer. And according to Oscar Blues, they dry hop it with Centennial hops. So that's what makes it so damn good. It managed to make the top five for American Pale Ales on ratebeer.com for 3 years in a row. Recently won the silver medal at the 2008 World Beer Championship. Dale Katechus, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, Katechus. He's the head brewer at Oscar Blues. And he had this to say about how they got to canning their beer. This is courtesy of a short video on their website at oscarblues.com.
Back in June of 2002, I received this unsolicited fax from Cask Brewing Systems up in Canada, and they had manufactured a two-at-a-time machine that allowed microbrewers to can beer. We received that fax and laughed hysterically for about the next 6 months. And my brewer and I, over that period of 6 months, laughed and laughed about the idea of us putting our three-dimensional, fully flavored beers into a can. And one day, I'd say probably in September, I stopped laughing. We're on our fourth year of 100% growth. It's all due to the can. What we learned is that there were a lot of benefits to the can, and outside of the fact that it made us laugh a great deal. We learned that cans were extremely portable. You could take them into the outdoors, you pack the can in, you pack it out. We learned that this beer in a can has never seen UV light. UV light breaks down fresh beer. We also learned that our dissolved oxygen levels were much lower in this can than even some of our competitors that were in bottles at the time. We learned that cans delivered fresh beer to the consumer, and all of the myths that were out there about the can were indeed that. They were myths.
The beauty of the can is that it's lined internally with a coating that prevents any contact from metal to the beer itself. It's impervious to light. There's no oxygen that can get in the cans. You can take them outdoors. You can take them places you can't take glass, such as the pool. into parks, into the areas where glass might break or it's just not allowed. This package is 100% recyclable. The recycled content in this package is over 50%. It's recyclable infinitely.
The more we researched, the more we found that the can was a superior package. And it motivated us to get our beer into a can as fast as possible.
That is an awesome story. That's a really good video, too. Check it out, oscarblues.com, oskarblues.com. And then look for this beer in your area. If I don't know if they have a distribution list. They should, anyway. I swear, you'll really be surprised at how good canned beer can taste. Now, you know, a couple episodes ago, I drank that watermelon wheat from 21st Amendment. They canned their wheat and an IPA. So it's catching on. There's a lot. I'm going to be featuring another one soon from Maui Brewing Company. That's on my list of beers to talk about. And again, great beer. I mean, bottles are kind of a pain in the butt. You know, they're heavy. They skunk easily. I just don't like bottling anymore. It's a pain in the butt, man. They're the bane of my existence. Well, on the very day that I released the last show, the season 4 finale of Top Chef was on TV. And Stephanie won, as I predicted. That wasn't really a shock. I mean, everyone knew she was going to win. But I read some news later that night. That was kind of shocking. Bravo announced a new show, Top Chef Junior. They're going to develop a new competition series where teens compete for the Top Chef title. No, thank you. Frances Berwick is the executive vice president, general manager of Bravo Media. She wants to cash in on the popularity of Top Chef. Why not? You know, it's the number one food show on cable. Top Chef and your network have really maybe jumped the shark here, I think, though. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Teens on television? It's like repellent. Thanks, Francis. Now I have to read. Can't watch TV. I'm going to have to read now. I was really kind of surprised how interesting, you know, Top Chef turned out to be this year, though. Season 4 started kind of like, I don't know. I just wasn't excited about it. And then it got better. And by the end, I was like all over it. So sometime this fall, they'll start it again, and I'll be back at it, I guess. So I was watching Tony Bourdain's show, No Reservations, on the Travel Channel, and they were playing either the Vancouver show or the show on Pacific Northwest. I think it was Vancouver. Now, actually, I know it's Vancouver now. Anyway, I guess there's a ton of different cuisines up there, like a complete melting pot of stuff. And one of the things he had were these hot dogs that he had at this special stand, but they weren't just hot dogs. They were special Japanese hot dogs. And there was no tutorial or recipe on how to make these things. They just showed them. And they looked really good. I mean, they looked delicious. So he said what was on them, but that was about it. So I decided, you know, that's easy enough. I'll just buy the ingredients and I'll make them. So I did. And they were really good. They were incredible. So I'm going to share them with you today on the show. Now, mind you, I'm not saying these are the authentic Japa dogs that you're going to get if you hit one of these stands in Vancouver. But this is how I made them. And if you make them like this, you'll at least be close. And then you can kind of like go off and do your variations on it. But here's basically what it is. You take an all beef frank, you marinate it in teriyaki, then you grill it. You serve it on a fresh bun or a roll, and then top it with wasabi mayonnaise, sliced nori, shredded daikon radish. And then on the side, you can have whatever you like. Maybe some Japanese pickles. That's what I did. And those are easy to make too. Pickles are really easy. So if you want to make some really quick and easy pickles, you buy some Japanese cucumbers or English cucumber, peel them if you like, then slice them into half-inch rounds, and then put them into a container. You mix 1 cup of water, 3/4 of a cup of rice wine vinegar, and 1/2 cup of sugar into a saucepan. Bring it to a boil. Turn the heat off. Allow it to cool. Once it's cooled, pour it over the sliced cucumbers, cover it, and allow it to refrigerate for a day or longer. The longer you let it refrigerate, the better they're going to be, but a day is fine. And the hot dogs are just super easy. The first thing you want to do is make sure you buy really good beef franks. Don't get cheap wieners that are the, you know, lips and asshole joke wieners. There's the ones that just say frankfurters. Don't get those. Get like, you know, 100% beef. Buy kosher dogs. Get them at the deli. Just make sure they're 100% beef. Take each frank in your hand. Gently poke little holes in them with a fork or maybe a small paring knife. Don't wreck the wiener. Just poke holes in it. Basically, what you're going to do is you want the teriyaki, when you put it in the teriyaki, you want the teriyaki to get inside the dog. And it's not going to do that through the skin. So once you've done that, you put them in a container or a Ziploc bag, and then pour teriyaki sauce all over the franks. And make sure you've completely soaked it so they're, you know, they're immersed in this teriyaki. Put enough in the bag to completely cover the franks. Seal the container, put the Franks in the fridge, marinate a couple hours, and you'll be set. Now, I went to a Japanese store, and I bought a container of wasabi mayonnaise because I'm lazy. But it's really easy to make it yourself if you want to. Mix regular mayonnaise, wasabi powder, and some sugar. Mix that together until it tastes good to you. You start with a half a cup of mayonnaise, a teaspoon of wasabi powder, and then a teaspoon of sugar, and go from there. Put more wasabi powder if you want it hotter. If you want a little bit sweeter, add a little bit more sugar. Just go really slow, get it to where you want it, and then you're set. It shouldn't be really super spicy, but you should definitely be able to taste the wasabi. And with the nori, that's roasted seaweed for all you gringos, you can buy that shredded at the Asian market or the Asian aisle of your grocery store if they sell it. Or you can shred it yourself with a sharp knife. It's not that tough. Just get a sheet of nori and then slice it real thin or put it through a paper shredder or something. I don't know. Just take some patience if you want to do it with a knife. Again, they sell it pre-made. So, you know, if they're selling it pre-made, I'm going to buy it. Now, daikon radish. Now, you've seen these. They're these white radishes, and they usually sell them in the produce section near Napa cabbage or turnips. They're usually kind of big and bulky, and they're all white. And they're really cheap. I mean, it's not that expensive for the size of it. So take one home, peel the skin off, run it through a mandolin, or get it sliced as thin as you can with a knife, and then take the sharp knife and cut it into thin shreds. So that's basically all you'll need to do for that, as long as it's thin. Now, you can look at the picture on the website if you want an idea. It's not a great picture, but it should give you a general idea of how it should look. And that's all the prep. Now, all you do is you grill the Franks, make your dogs, and as I said, you use the picture as a guide, you know. You can kind of see how it's done. I didn't even pile all that much stuff on it either. So, I don't know, the picture's not that good because it looks like it's got a lot of stuff on it, but it really doesn't. It's just kind of full. But it's just that the grilled dog is dark, the nori's dark. You can't really see a damn thing in that picture, but it's really good. It's delicious. So enjoy those Japanese dogs, Japa dogs, Philly style. Hey, so following up on that tomato scare that we were talking about last show, kind of dominated the show and was in the news almost every day. They never nailed down the source of the tomatoes. Huh. Gee, I kind of wonder why that is. Any guess from you guys? Any guesses what the FDA might be trying to hide or who they might be trying to hide? Yeah, I've been thinking. I don't know either. The CDC reported a current total 277 people in 28 states have been sickened by the tomatoes. 43 people hospitalized, one person dead. So, of course, the confidence in our government's ability to protect us has, you know, waned a little bit.
With the tainted tomato outbreak still ongoing, but no federal inspectors on any farms anywhere yet, consumers are anxious in general.
I'm very concerned because, like, I remember years ago when there's a Tylenol scare, it is like kind of the same thing where, like, you don't know if this could be your last vegetable you eat.
And worried in particular about imports, even though in this case we just don't know whether the source was foreign or domestic.
I would like to know where my fruit and vegetables come from. I check the labels at the market to see if it's domestic produce.
In a study that preceded the latest tomato scare, the Harvard School of Public Health found more than half of those surveyed only barely trust the food inspection process. More than half do not trust food imports from communist China, and almost half don't trust foods from Mexico. The FDA reports the overwhelming majority of tomatoes consumed in the U.S. at the time of the salmonella outbreak were from inside the U.S., Central Florida, and outside the U.S., Mexico.
I just think we will see growing pressure to have more labeling so people can make some choices in the global marketplace of what and where their food comes from and which ones they choose to give to their families.
The Harvard study also found the vast majority of Americans surveyed were well aware of the food recalls of recent years, including the E. coli tainted spinach from California that sickened more than 200 and left 3 dead, the tainted peanut butter that made almost 200 people sick, and the green onions traced back to a farm in Mexico that triggered a hepatitis outbreak and killed 3 people.
Wait. Play that back. The what from where?
And the green onions traced back to a farm in Mexico.
Where again?
Farm in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Mexico.
I understand. Thank you for that report, CNN.
Mexico.
Yep, got it. Thank you. boy. What do you know? What do you say?
Killed 3 people.
Now, you know I'm really into food porn, right? I love looking at food. I love food photography. I shoot my food as often as I can. And when someone makes a really well-plated dish, I whip out my camera. I start snapping pictures. It's just what I do, and I'm not alone. We all do it. If you're a foodie, you take pictures of your food. I rarely do it in a really fancy place, but I've been known to whip out my point-and-shoot just about anywhere I am because I don't care. Well, this fairly upscale restaurant in New York, Momofuku Co., is now prohibiting photography inside their restaurant. No cameras allowed. Co-chef owner David Chang was asked for a comment, and you know what he said? He said this. He said, "It's just food. Eat it." Really, David? Is it just food? Because, you know, if it were just food, I don't think he'd be charging $17 for a seared scallop. If it were just food, maybe you wouldn't spend all that time making that single $3 scallop look like it's actually worth $17. Because I think that takes some form of skill and talent. And, you know, maybe we'd like to bring that home with us so we can remember that $17 scallop we paid for and how good it was. Share it with our friends. Maybe try to make one like yours. Emulate it. Now, if you're going to charge the kind of money you do for the food that you serve, and they charge a $45 corking fee if you want to bring your own wine to the restaurant, you know, I think allowing your patrons to bring a camera with them is not a big deal. I think that should be all right. Now, I understand if some dumb shit brought in a set of studio strobes, some umbrellas, a backdrop, view camera, you know, made a big deal out of it. I can totally understand that. Make an example out of him, that's fine. Because that's just dumb, stupid, rude. Or maybe someone was making a scene and you had to tell them, all right, that's enough, take the camera down. Or, and say no to professional photography if you want. You know, you can say no professional photography allowed. But to ban cameras in your restaurant, you're not going to make any friends there. And it sounds like you're a bit over your head there with ego. It's just food, eat it. Let me ask you a question. If Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie came into your restaurant to have dinner, and they were just eating, they wanted to be left alone, and you showed up to their table and wanted a picture with them eating in your restaurant, and they said, "No, David, we're just people. Serve us." Would you think the same way? I'm wondering about that. If the tables turned on you. Serious Eats New York broke this story. They interviewed a couple chefs about the policy and asked them what they thought. And Mario Batali said, "You mean people like bloggers?" He said they have a photo policy that they do not allow lights or taking photos of other customers, but they don't stop, you know, foodies clicking photos of their food with a small camera. I mean, if it starts to feel like a photo shoot or they flash a bunch of times, you know, we ask them to stop. So it makes the other, you know, guests uncomfortable. You don't want that. You know, he poses for guests for hundreds of photos a year, he says, in the restaurant. So it's not a big deal to him. And that's Mario fucking Batali. Daniel Boulud said that he doesn't have a policy, but he does discourage it. But he's certainly not going to ban it. He says, you know what he likes? He prefers if you want to take pictures, if you know you want to take pictures, make a reservation and let them know that you might want to take pictures of your food. They will actually seat you in an area where the lighting is better for you. That's how thoughtful Daniel Boulud is. They'll do that for you. And then, you know, he went even further than that. He said he'll send people photos of the dishes that they had if they asked them for them. And that's pretty cool. The problem comes when people flash and it affects other customers and they're having a bad experience. And I completely understand that. But don't ban cameras from your restaurants. That's just stupid. So we understand, no flash photography, don't upset other people, don't take their picture. But outside of that, come on, let's be real. We're foodies. Now you're killing our spirit. Hey, so unless you're living under a rock or you're just, you know, not interested in other people's rights, gay marriage became legal here in California. And it's pretty forward-thinking for my state, I think. And it further solidifies itself as a total liberal hunk in this country. But I thought this was interesting. Heinz Corporation recently pulled a mayonnaise ad that showed two men kissing. Not that, you know, anybody really wants to see that, that's not homosexual. But they pulled the ad, which, you know, I think kind of sucks. It was shown on British television for about 1 week. And it wasn't even a real kiss. I mean, it wasn't like they were tonguing each other. It's just a quick peck. But even that was too much, I guess. So get this, Heinz Ad Agency received 200 complaints about the ad. The commercial was about a half a minute long, pretty standard. Shows two kids rushing out for school as the mother, and I use that term somewhat lightly, puts some mayo on other sandwiches in the kitchen. And the scene's father walks through to grab his lunch, kisses the wife on his way out, and the wife calls him sweet cheeks, but she does it, you know, like you're at a New York deli. He's like, hey, sweet cheeks, what'll it be? You know, that type of thing. But they pulled the ad, man. Jesus, no love for the gays, huh? That sucks. Anyway, there's that. Not even sure why I shared it other than the fact it was topical about food. It's kind of about food. But people all over the world still have a problem with homosexuality. I just don't get it. I mean, you should see the faces they make when we kiss our wives, dude. It's like, ugh. It's like icky. So imagine how they feel. Rustico Restaurant. This is an interesting story that I have to share because, once again, Bubby is providing tons of information. Bubby from Brain Gravy. Check out Brain Gravy. Braingravy.libsyn.com. Bubby lives in Maryland, near Baltimore, I believe. Rustico Restaurant is a beer and food pairing restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia. And according to Bubby, who lives kind of near there, he has never been there, but he lives near there, he knows all about this. They had to remove these things called beer pops from their menu about a year ago. They came in flavors like raspberry, you know, really fruity flavors. I guess that didn't jibe with Virginia legislation. According to the state's ABC, beer must be served in its original container or served immediately after pouring. So their beer sickles were kind of out of luck. They had a bunch of items on their menu that used beer in food, and those were also under these regulations. They had framboise marinated red onions that were served in a romaine salad. So there became this big discussion and argument and a question about when does beer become less liquid and more solid food? Well, you know, I always thought beer is food, isn't it? Isn't beer food? Think about it. Beer is a food, so I don't know what the difference is. What kills me about this, and I brought this up when I was talking to Bubby, is that the French have been cooking with wine, brandy, cognac, all sorts of spirits. They use those in their sauces for years. And I think the fact that they cook them, and they're cooking the alcohol out of it, is it not then alcohol? Or is it not then a spirit? So what's the difference? So let's say you're taking beer and you're freezing it and you're serving it as an alcohol pop. So you serve it to people 21 and over. What's the problem? It's like ordering a beer. Rustico executive chef Frank Morales eventually challenged the ABC thanks to a bill that was sponsored by Delegate Adam Eben, a Democrat, thank you very much, and Senator Patsy Tyser. Holy shit, guess what? Another Democrat. It's now legal again. It went through legislation. He raised a stake. It went through state legislation, and starting July 1st, the $5 frozen brewskis come in flavors including like framboise, Sherry Creek, peach, cassis, banana, plum, chocolate stout. It sounds like they like to deep freeze flavored lambics and stuff. I love that. Rustico Restaurant is located at 827 Slater's Lane in Alexandria, Virginia, 22314. That's the zip code. Or check them out at rusticorestaurant.com or call them 703-224-5051. I just love this story. I love that somebody stood up to the ABC in defense of beer. But this restaurant was probably a hidden gem that nobody knew about. I mean, they're a beer food restaurant, a beer food pairing restaurant. I love restaurants that are beer centric. And it's one of the things I love about Stone, that when you go in there, they're not just about their beer and everybody else's beer, but about cooking with it and pairing with it. As you order things there and they'll suggest a beer that'll go with it, even if it's not theirs. So I love that. I love any organization, any restaurant, any establishment that tries to help people understand that beer is just like wine when it comes to food. It pairs well and you can cook with it and it is food. It's not exclusive to wine. So guys, listen, if you want some upscale food in an upscale place that basically is made for men, there's this place, this new restaurant here in Culver City. It's called Royal Tea. It's an industrial-looking cafe surrounded by Japanese pop art and really nice-looking American and Japanese chicks serving food dressed as French maids. Whoa, yeah! Now you're talking. You think I'm fucking with you? I'm not. It's not Hooters. It's classier than that. I mean, if Hooters turns you off, as it turns me off, it's kind of stupid. You mean you might want something a little more upscale? Dude, look into this. They're going to be popping up all over the place. Hey, no pun intended. I read about it in the New York Times. It's a Japanese-style Maido Kafu. Is that even right? Maido Kafu? Damn, my Japanese sucks. It's a maid cafe. That's basically what it is. And it's an odd hybrid of cultural influences. But the roots are specific to Japan. The idea came from a Japanese video game where the main character worked as a maid in a restaurant. And that spun off in 2002 as a Tokyo cafe where hardcore gamers and all these anime geeks and fans, they're called otaku or nerds. They're doted upon by maids who call their customers master. And they'll blow on their food to cool it off, stuff like that. So I guess the Akihabara shopping district in Tokyo, where computer and comic book stores proliferate, we're just, you know, stuffed with these things, these maid cafes. They had maid hair salons. They had maid ear cleaning parlors. Damn, that is something. Susan Hancock, who's the owner, never even been to a maid cafe in Japan. And she said there's some differences between her cafe and the ones in Tokyo. The maids here will not blow or draw on your food, and they're not intended to be pretend girlfriends. In Japan, I guess, the maids in Japan, for some gamers, they'll spend hours a day on their consoles, and they'll be their girlfriends for the day.
Me so horny.
You losers. And their maids don't call their customers master. The girls are sweet. They're not flirty. She said, we want our customers to come in and feel like they're in Alice in Wonderland, not Hooters. Well, damn. And I'm married, so I'm not going in. I'm not really a gamer, so I'm not into that either. Oh, man, what a wonderful place for single nerds. Hey, sick puppy. This place is for you, man. Hey, speaking of sick puppy, I wanted to mention this. You guys need to check out Should I Drink That? Episode 39. They drank my homebrew again. Except this time, they had a bottle of my Clarkeweissen Bavarian wheat beer and a bottle of my Black Cat Stout. And they liked them both, so that's awesome. And this is the second time they've had my beers on their show, and they're incredibly kind to my beers every time. I sent them a pair of my Belgian beers before, and it turned out to be one of their highest downloaded shows. I'm not sure if that had anything to do with my beer, but you know what? I'll take it. Anyway, shouldidrinkthat.com. Father Spoon, Sick Puppy, good friends of the show. Good friends of mine and part of the Beer Safari. It's Jungle of Beer. BeerSafari.com. Big Foamy Head. Good Beer Show. The Beer Report. Pacific Brew News. Rick Sellers from Draft Magazine. You know that, dude. Brew Crazy. Davis on Draft. Craft Beer Radio. You name it. If it's a beer podcast worth a damn, it's on there. Hell, they even let me be part of it. Oh, I'm toast. All right, I'm out of here. I got nothing else. Do I? No, I got nothing else. Look for Oscar Blues at your local beer store, wherever you buy your beer or your liquid. Make the Japa Dogs if you feel compelled. They're really easy, and they're really good, too. Damn delicious. Thanks again to Bubby for the show material, to Alice in Chains for the music. Look for the links to the songs in the iTunes store. Keep me legal. And thank you for listening yet again. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see all of you next time. Later.